Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're currently listening to the free version of Let Me Talk.
If you want longer, ad-free episodes, even earlier, head to lmtpod.com to find out how you subscribe.
Let me talk! Let me talk!
1, 2, 3, 4!
Fully belated Brentford review is here. I'm David Mooney. This is Let Me Talk. I'm joined in the pub by a jet-lagged Sam Lee.
And everything, really. Now you say in the pub, it feels like I'm just carrying on the Vegas experience. I'm not. I just thought, I don't know, here we are. When was the Brentford game? 2 weeks ago?
It was Monday night. It's now Wednesday lunchtime. What time are you on?
I don't know. No, I'm caught up. Just a couple more days of sleep, which shouldn't be too much of a problem being a football journalist.
You put the work in already, haven't you? You've won much money out in Vegas while you were there? Put it all on black and get the house?
So I went with a certain amount of money and came back with $200. So everything was in the budget. Some nights fairly down, some nights were up. It was a bit of a roller coaster. I mean, at one point on Sunday night, like 4 a.m. going into Monday morning, at some point I was like $300 up, and I must have been more than that down. And to the point where we got back to the room, and I was like, I need to go and see how many dollars I've got left in my room. And I basically must have gambled the majority of that until it got to like 4 a.m. I had to stay up because I actually had like a work call thing, so I was, otherwise I'd have just gone to bed. I was just staying up trying to like kill time, not lose all the money. And it just got to a point where I had like $107, and I was playing craps, so it was the equivalent basically of putting it all on red or all on black, but instead of doubling your money, if you get double one or double six, it can treble, or in some cases double your money. And it came out as double one, so I won $321 or whatever, and I was like, this is unbelievable, like, I can't believe
it. Easy this, isn't it?
I can't, well no, because the luck really does work both ways. So that was like, right, I'm going to bed, that's it, done. And then after that I was like, let's keep it even. But then on Monday when we were waiting for the plane, went back on the table, lost 107. But it was when you go away and it's all part of the budget,
it's fine.
But it's a weird feeling, like, oh, this is fine. Like, I'd budgeted for this much, but the feeling of losing is not nice.
Yeah.
So like the first night, I think I was like $200 up, and then like lost that, and it was like, this is going well. What a great game this is! Like, first time I'd ever played craps, and then within about 5 minutes, lost it all. And I was like, right, $110 on red. It was black. So I was like, right, let's slow down. But yeah, great weekend.
Good. And you saw the game somehow.
Yeah, I did see the game. It took ages, though, like, because they've got sports books in the casinos, which, you know, just massive, loads of screens, massive screens. But they weren't, like, the city wasn't on. On the first night we got there, we wanted to watch the Spurs-Everton game, at least the start of it. It kicked off at 4:30. It wasn't on in the sports book. Like, what's going on? But there was a sports bar. And I got there 15 minutes late, and my wife messaged me saying Brentford had just scored, but it was the classic on a delay. So I got to do the Nadum thing of like paying attention to what happened, and all of a sudden they just kicked it down the fucking middle and scored a goal. So I was thinking,
yeah, it's funny, like when I watched it live, that was also my reaction.
Yeah, there's not too much we can tell you about it than that people can decide for themselves. But at that point, I was thinking, because as much as, you know, after we said after the Spurs game, the vibes are good, they're playing well, they've come back from the Club World Cup, they've done literally as well as you could have expected at that point. Going back to the Palace game, thinking what's coming next. Everything's been great. But like that element of conceding stupid goals hasn't fully gone away, has it? Like that Everton game, like they fully shit the bed for that first goal.
Can I counter with that the Brentford goal is not a stupid goal to concede? And I know people listening to this will go, what on earth are you talking about? They kicked it down the middle and they scored. That's it. When you watch it again, Ivan Toney is incredible.
The first thing I noticed
with the work
he
does.
The first thing I noticed was Toney.
On Ake.
How's that happen?
Yeah, stops Ake challenging for the ball. And Mopé's awareness to know that he can't be offside because Toney isn't going to challenge for the ball just takes the rest of the City defence out. Now, okay, you should cover, like, Guardiola, Diaz, someone should be coming around to cover that header. It's an old kind of centre-halves thing, isn't it? One goes, one drops, that sort of thing. But
I wish Nadim was here.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like that's the kind of thing we're going to know, it isn't.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
It's like the old thing of don't play the ball across your box. Of course you can.
Of course you can. But
if one of them drops, depending on the timing of it,
everyone's onside.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but if Toney isn't going to win the ball, then Mopé's already onside. Yeah, thing. But
that's such a sluggy Brentford thing to have worked on.
Yeah,
like, they'll know exactly how that works.
But ultimately, it's a clever goal in that sense. They've looked at how they can attack City and what weaknesses City might have. They've spotted this one, they've gone for it, and they've done it, and it's worked. And you know, fair play. Like, I think most weeks that goal doesn't go in, and that sort of situation doesn't happen. It's not. I think there are worse goals to concede.
There are, like, so obviously it just reminded me of the goal that Leipzig scored at home.
Yeah.
The first one where they just kicked it down the middle and like Akanji just lost it, which was more of a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, for the reasons you can work out, there was no Toney helping it. It just messed it up. But I was I was just thinking, it's just as much as you are right. It's just a goal kick down the middle, where the centre-back just gets bundled off it and the striker runs in, and you just think, so there's the Everton one, there was a two at Newcastle, there was the late consolation the other week against a team that escapes me because I'm so tired.
Burnley?
Was it Burnley the other week when they scored in like the 92nd minute?
Yeah.
That was it, yeah, 3-1. And so I was just thinking, right, okay, so because I don't think that's fully gone away yet. And then I didn't think the Brentford game would be a great spectacle anyway. Like, if you remember the game two seasons ago when City won there 1-0, and even the game, was it 1-0 at home as well? Awful games to watch.
2-0 at home, it was.
2-0 at home, just because that's just how Brentford play. Like, you need to kind of, or well, the way City do it, is you just kind of need to make the game as close and controlled and boring, really, as incident-free as possible to do anything. To the point where I was thinking, I'm going to try and watch this game, but if there's something else going on the Monday, I just won't watch it. Because, you know, if someone says, oh, do you want to go and do this? And yeah, I won't waste a good opportunity to be in Vegas. But there was nothing really going on. So I was like, yeah, we'll definitely go and watch it.
The craps table will take a lot of money.
yeah, exactly, by that point. I was like, by that point, yeah, we'll go watch it. And then I sat down, was watching it, and then I messaged you after, what, half an hour?
Yeah.
20, 35 minutes? I was like, they're playing really well.
So I'm going to make a bit of a confession now, where I haven't been dealing with City conceding and playing badly very well lately, and there's been games where I've reacted quite badly to conceding a goal in the way that, like, not just the usual oh that's annoying sort of thing, the sort of like, oh, the couch needs a punch, that sort,
okay,
of,
yeah,
that sort of reaction. Chelsea 4-4 absolutely did me,
yeah,
because the nature of those goals. And I think a lot of it comes back round to, I didn't think City were playing particularly well. I was struggling to see how they were going to control games and how the process was going to go moving forward and how the season was going to look. And even as far as, like, when the Bob goal was disallowed against Spurs, and I was thinking, oh, the bullshit's starting again.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to be in that frame of mind again there. And obviously nothing happened. They won the game. Great. When Brentford scored, it didn't affect my mood, and I think that's because the context of the Brentford goal, I'm now feeling comfortable that City are kind of almost back, not if they're back at it, but they're on their way to being back at it, and the performance was, I thought the performance was fine. I actually said after the game, and I still stand by this, I think that's City's best performance of the season so far.
Yeah, probably all things considered, the Palace game at home,
You're not getting that one. Nobody's going to get one.
Professional job. Some mistakes. No. Yeah, you're probably not far off because it was a very good reaction. I mean, around the time I messaged you saying they're playing really well, they started doing some stupid things in the back again, didn't they? There was like a 3-minute spell, although scarred by that Palace game, maybe it was only a 60-second spell. But it felt like a bit of a spell when it was like, just stop doing mad stuff at the back, like Edison.
Don't just chip having out a few trips.
There was a few things like that. But then in terms of the response, they rode that pretty well. Loads of chances, obviously, with the Flecken making saves and that kind of thing. But the fact that City were creating good chances, it's the classic thing of just keep going with this. You know, Guardiola wouldn't have had any issues with that at half-time. And obviously Foden kind of calmed everything down. And from that point, you think, this will be all right.
Yeah.
Again, maybe it's because I was detached. There was no commentary. I was on the other side of the world eating chicken wings for breakfast. There was no reason to fully log into it. But, like, it just felt like... City will be okay here. They're playing well, and unless they when Haaland missed that chance, I thought okay. But I think I was more annoyed with Haaland specifically rather than a general sense of this is the kind of night where
these things are happening.
I was annoyed with Haaland because it's like, well, City have given up a goal easily, and if you're going to get a chance to easily equalise, you've got to fucking take that, especially when you're Haaland and that's what you do. I always say, like, he's got one job. He doesn't, you know. There's other benefits to Haaland playing, but I do think he has fewer uses to the team, maybe more important uses, but fewer uses to the team than the other City players. So when he missed that, but as my wife pointed out, she was like, yeah, he has just come back from injury. I was like, yeah, that's good context.
Yeah, but I feel like he'd have missed that in November.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Like, that was why I was so annoyed. Because if he didn't miss it in August, you'd be like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. It's like, it's still Haaland. But yeah, like, there is obviously that sense this season. Not just a sense, but the facts. Like, he's not scoring as many
more chances.
And there's more chances like that when he goes through on goal. Because I was with somebody and he was, oh, you just get that feeling with Haaland that he's just going to score. And it's like, I can't hammer somebody for saying that. But it's not really the case this season, is it? Like, the feeling I get when he goes through is, you better fucking score this. And then, yeah, so he didn't. But then, like, Foden's composure. I mean, I don't know if this is the thing that's going to remain, or it was just something that was in evidence that night. Because you still wouldn't say he's the most composed in front of the goal. But Christ, like, that first one was great. And then obviously the third one was really great. But the second one was different, but a great header.
But the irony is, all the way through, it shows what I know. Because the first one, I was like, oh, he's taking too much time there. Bang, goal. The second one, he was like, well, that's a misdirected header. Should have gone back across the goal. And then, no, find the bottom corner. And then the third one, I was like, it's taking too many touches.
Well, that's what I like about the touches for the composure for the third goal. Because if you think back to Foden generally in those positions where he's got time to think, I can score a goal here, they're generally when it goes wrong. Like, if he can smash it in from the edge of the box, I think that's a different kind of chance. But when he's in the box, or even again the Champions League final, it's like, you've done the hard work, now just do the finish. I feel like that's where he falls down a bit. But then, maybe it helps when you're 2-1 up, you've scored both goals, you're confident in the team's performance, you're confident in your own performance. But I feel like the touches he was taking, he was fully in control of that situation. And that's not something we've normally seen with Foden when he is in those scenarios. But like, just fair play to him. Like, he's been... It's weird to work out. I mean, I know everyone's saying now he's been having a great season, and he has had a much better season than he has a bad season. But there was an element of like starting well, and then not doing much for a bit. I want to kind of say, I don't know whether it'll be October, November, not the whole period, because like that Chelsea game, even though City lost, he was great in that Chelsea game. But I feel like there was a kind of period where he wasn't doing a lot, and then recently again he's gone back to being like extra good, like better than he's been. I don't know, for a couple of years maybe. And then you add it all together and he's... Did we say this the other week? When we were talking about City's best player this season, like might it be Foden? Like Alvarez is another weird one because he's had ups and downs, hasn't he? Like, I wouldn't know where you'd put his average level for Alvarez. But the way Foden's been, and also the way that the collection of players that Guardiola put together for that team, like when you see it, you just think... Because I woke up and I saw like a tweet from some FPL person saying like, Guardiola, you madman. I was like, what's he done? But then when I saw it, I was like,
yeah, that's fine.
That's all right. Like the way it's been going recently where, you know, they've had the fullbacks giving the width and everyone in the middle. And I was like, as long as Bernardo's kind of creeping into that middle somehow and he's not just on the right, then that's all right. But then when you look at it and you think, obviously Rodri's backing them up and it's Bernardo, Foden, Alvarez, De Bruyne,
Haaland.
And Haaland. It's fucking, that's obscene, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very, it's a seesaw that's only going in one direction, isn't it? But then you look at the overall performance, and weirdly, okay, Brentford had their moments of being on top, but it's one of the most controlled performances City have had for a while.
Yeah, and again, you go back to, you know, when Guardiola mentioned the other week, some games you play De Bruyne and Foden together, but some you wouldn't for the stability. And then I asked him before the Burnley game, apparently, what circumstances would they play together? And he was like, it's more off the ball, and, you know, they can't really play as a proper holding midfielder, so then we need to change and play with three. And then you think, well, if he is going to play them together, it might be one of those kind of like luxury games. Well, no, it's either like Burnley when you're expecting loads of spaces, or it's like Sheffield United at home when it's like, well, they're not really going to attack, so it's okay. You don't think it's going to be Brentford away?
Yeah, and weirdly, with that though, Brentford didn't attack in the way that we expected them to. I mean, maybe City didn't let them. That's the other side of this. Yeah. But you saw the success that Brentford had last season. Get it high to Tony, get it up there quickly, get the flick on and get the runners in behind. And the times when they got up the pitch and they kind of got in behind City, it felt like there were opportunities for them. I thought City dealt with them quite well in the way in which they kind of snuffed it out. But more often than not, City won the ball back. They didn't try and do that thing where they didn't try and get in behind and stretch the game. Kept the ball, made Brentford get back into shape and kept them where they were. And when you think of some of the issues that City have had lately this season controlling games, they've carried the ball at the wrong time, or they've played it forward at the wrong time. Yeah. And this was almost as if those players that had been doing that, it had clicked for them that, you know, there's a time and a place, and sometimes it's not here.
Yeah, you can imagine that would be part of the conversations that they had about, you know, after the Villa game, after the Palace game, when they got together, possibly both. Like, come on, lads, what are we doing? Because it was only ever little things like that, wasn't it? It wasn't a big thing, unless you say that the cause of those little things was the big thing of complacency. And the way some of the players were speaking, it may be a bit hard of that.
It's hard to, yeah.
But then it's like, it's the way that the pundits use that word easily. I feel like footballers, it's easy to use that as well. Because it's almost something different, but also it's just like, if there's something going wrong that you can't explain, it might be easy as a footballer to say, oh, it's like, you know, maybe last season with how we went, we eased off a bit. Even though, if you were to say to them, like if you ask Diaz, for example, because I think I've got something in my head that Diaz maybe said, oh, after you win a lot, it's different or whatever. But if you'd say to Diaz, well, what were you doing differently? How did you let up? I bet he couldn't tell you. I bet he couldn't tell you a single thing. I mean, I know everyone listening to this would say it's because he had a girlfriend, but I find that mental. But like, I don't think the players themselves would actually be able to pinpoint something that they weren't doing properly. It was just the kind of weird run of doing stupid things in matches. But yeah, and then it comes back to, you know, what I was saying, all those players in the middle, Guardiola saying, can't defend with like two holding midfielders because De Bruyne and Foden can't do it. You need to do it with three. We need to adapt something. Like when he said you need to adapt something, you could easily read into that and say, well, it's not going to happen because they'll have to change somewhere. But with Guardiola, you'd be like, oh, well, they probably will just adapt something then, and then we'll see it work. Or maybe it won't work, because when Cancelo left, they did fully expect Bernardo Silva to be the left back. Well, that was the plan, and then it didn't really work, so they changed it around.
Exactly.
So it got to be much better, and maybe they'll try and do the same thing in a different game, and they'll come unstuck and they go, actually, we can't really do that. Let's forget it. Yeah. And it won't really matter too much when Stones is back, and they'll just do what they were doing last season anyway. Yeah. And then it just becomes Alvarez and or Foden being on the bench, and it's unfortunate for them, but the team move or whatever. But if that's the way they're going to do it, and like, it was that thing we talked about, it was one of the games, maybe the FA Cup game, Huddersfield, when De Bruyne and Foden together was kind of being talked about, because De Bruyne was coming back, Foden was in the middle, people were liking it, and Marty Perrin out tweeted, like, don't forget there's that thing that Pep says, like, the good players always together. And then Guardiola mentioned it in the press conference, but then he said, oh, but it might be a bit difficult. But when you list those players that are all in the middle, I mean, even if you do lose a little bit defensively, and maybe this is where Guardiola would eventually say, yeah, I'm still a bit uncomfortable with this, but I feel like even if you were to lose a little bit, you've still got so much to gain. Like there's the pros massively outweigh the cons there with those so many good players in the middle. It's genuinely outrageous.
Coming up after a short ad break, there'll be more analysis of the Brentford game. We'll be talking about the formation and shape and whether it actually matters. And we'll be talking about Foden drifting in from the left, offering some stability. See you shortly.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let Me Talk is sponsored by you, the listeners.
The best way to support the podcast is by subscribing via Memberful.
You can pay as little as £2 per month, which gives you early access to all our podcasts ad-free, and they're packed with even more content.
That gives you even more minutes of us to fill up your week.
Subscribing is really easy, and the longer episodes will integrate seamlessly with your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify or Apple. Head over to lmtpod.com for more information on signing up and links to all of our socials.
The setup isn't new. What they did against Brentford is pretty much what they've been doing for large spells of this season.
It's just the players involved. But it's Haaland and De Bruyne as well.
But you look at. I mean, we've talked a lot on Foden already, but let's focus a little bit more on him, because there was a long spell where people seem to be like just losing their minds over the fact that he wasn't playing in the centre and that Guardiola kept naming him on the left. And then you look at the performance against Brentford. Yeah, sure, he was named on the left again, but that's not where he played.
No,
he was through the middle. It was Guardiola operating down the left flank, and Walker operating down the right.
Just how it's going to work.
That's just how it is. And that's Guardiola getting De Bruyne and Foden in the team together. They're both playing the number eight position, but that's not how they do it for the shape and the setup, but it's almost. And I appreciate this sounds wanky, and we're getting to that point of football big thinkers, but it's almost like the formation doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, this isn't great for if you listen to this podcast for insightful stuff. Obviously, I wasn't watching the Brentford game in the most kind of inquisitive frame of mind, but it's off the ball. I'd like to see, because like you say, with all those players in the middle. And the way you say there, it's almost like the formation doesn't matter. Obviously, it does, but when you've got that so many players in the middle on the ball, you just think they will find those solutions. We know that Guardiola's providing the width, Walker's providing the width. That's all fine. It's off the ball. I'm interested in how it. I know people would have watched the game and they'll know already, because they'd have been, I don't know, paying more attention or looking at it in a different way than I was.
Not thinking about the craps table.
Yeah, exactly. Which I did get back to quite quickly afterwards. Great. It's a great way to gamble, but obviously that implicit in that is
it's a great way
it's
to
a
lose
fucker
money, yeah.
As well. It's an absolute fucker. When that seven comes up, it's so bad.
I don't even know anything about this game.
Yeah, nobody does, but it is fun. When you're on a table for an hour or 2 hours, people around the table rolling the dice. I'll tell you what though, when you throw the dice down the other end and one of them bounces off the table, it's just embarrassing for a start. But then you got you'll have certain you, they'll kind of other players at the table will kind of place faith in certain rollers. So there was two like serious American guys down the other end. And after a while, they were like, I was rolling, shooting, and they were, and you could tell, because I got one of them on like a hard 10, which is like two fives, and it came, I rolled it, and it came in. So then him and his mate, or I don't know if they were mates or what, they kept putting like heavy bets on, or like more bets on what I was rolling, and then yeah, I rolled a seven. And all the chips come off the table, they go back to the house, and it's just an absolute bastard.
But anyway.
Yeah, but City's off the ball shape. When they've got those players on the pitch, I just want to have another look at exactly how it's set up and who's going where. Like I say, people might well have noticed this already. We'll talk about it after the next game, which is apparently Everton.
It is, yeah.
Amy told me this morning it was half 12. Half 12. Fantastic. This is the next run of fixtures I need to, I'll learn like a month's worth of fixtures, make plans for that, and then after that I've got no idea. So we'll have a look again at just how that setup works out of possession. But again, in terms of Everton at home, like, they're obviously a difficult team to play against, but in terms of how you'd expect them to play, that might be when Guardiola goes, right, yeah, fine, get all the best players on, we'll put them in this shape. Well, and then the thing I'll probably pay attention to most is who's doing what our position, who's going where. It's just a lot of, you know, when it's Foden on the left, it's just you just do a lot of running. Like, you just do a lot. Like with Haaland, it's like Haaland's not the best presser, but he's not bad. Like, it's just you do what you need to do. But with Foden, obviously, there's a bit more of a tracking back element, and it's just being constantly on top of him, you do that. Alvarez is always running anyway, so that's okay. Bernardo's always going to do that, so you can see it working. De Bruyne has always been, he was always like the lead presser, wasn't he? He'd always go up with Haaland, he'd do more. Do you remember that Arsenal game a couple of seasons ago? He was just needing oxygen at the end. He was fucked, wasn't it?
The Real Madrid game, wasn't it, where I think I tweeted when De Bruyne's number came off, he's like, he's going to need a stretcher to get to the bench. He's just like, it's worked so hard.
So he's always done it, and again, fortunately so far, touch wood, he's been fine with his injury. Like, when you see him sprinting after balls, in fact, when I was watching the game on Monday night, I didn't have that normal feeling I've got with De Bruyne of, oh, like, careful when he's running. I suppose it's different when you're in the stadium as well, and you can actually appreciate that physical effort slightly more. But yeah, I guess it's obviously it does come down to where they've got to run, when, like, the organisation of who they jump to and when. But in terms of, because Grealish will track back naturally more so than Foden will, so it's just going to be a case of being on top of him. Like, whenever you sat in there, the analysts at City games, they'd always be on top of Mahrez, just constantly reminding, even though they can't fucking, he can't hear them, you know, they can't even hear Guardiola on the bench, let alone them up in the stand. But they're always like cajoling him to do it, because I think it's that trade off again. Mahrez, we all know what brings you on the ball. Off the ball, he wasn't rubbish, but they'd always be shouting at him to get back, just because, you know, he's not getting at the same level as you would with other players. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on how it's working off the ball, but it's just an unreal combination of players to have.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I know we never do previews on this show, but I'm interested a little bit. We'll come back to Brentford, because I'm interested in a little bit for Everton. Is there any reason, if everybody's still fit, to change anything?
Yeah, because it won't just be what combination of players are going to get us the victory. It's who needs to play because of their rhythm, who maybe should, like De Bruyne probably shouldn't start another game, maybe, I'm guessing. Maybe he's just fine now, but maybe it's a case of, well, yeah, you take him out, and also, well, you're going to need Stones, maybe not against Copenhagen, but against,
I don't know either, so it's alright.
I haven't known the fixtures yet.
Whoever comes after Copenhagen.
Yeah, whoever comes after Copenhagen. So in terms of, are there reasons to change
Chelsea?
Here, I think it is Chelsea, half five, yeah. Yes, it is. Ooh, that'd be good. That'd be good. I mean, everyone thought Chelsea was shit when they went to Stamford Bridge. And obviously, they played really well. It was a mad game, and City didn't play particularly well. But Christ, could be a bloodbath for that one. But we won't do a preview of something 3 games ahead. But yeah,
we don't do previews anyway. Let's not jump too far ahead.
But yeah, in terms of, is there any reason to change it? There will be, won't there? Like, somebody will have to come out for fitness purposes. Somebody will have to come back in. There's Stones. Obviously, what we were talking about there with the setup of players in the middle and how it works, you've still got Stones to come back into that, which would probably, it would necessitate a change, because you can't have the fullbacks going up the pitch and Stones going into midfield. Like, there's no point in Rodri dropping back, you're losing Rodri in the middle. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, that may have been an element of why Stones didn't play against Brentford. Like, it's, you know, we talk about it.
Don't, like, if there's no reason to have a centre back going in there, then you won't do it. You don't have to. So it doesn't matter who you play centre back. You see the centre backs line up as Ake and Diaz. Yeah. You go, well, none of them's doing
it. It's fine. But it's like when Stones got injured, was that Leipzig? In one of the Champions League home games, and Guardiola was like, yeah, we're in trouble. And before the game, he was saying, I can't remember what he said, but it was along the lines of, you can play without Rodri, you can play without Stones, but not both. Like, that's an issue. But particularly with Stones, because obviously the whole key to last season, which I'm not going to explain again because I don't need to, was him going into midfield and sorting it out. But then when he got injured again after Everton, it didn't matter because they had Alvarez dropping in from the striker. So Haaland being out meant that Stones wasn't missed quite so much anyway. But now, so that kind of offset that, more through kind of look than judgment. And in this case, I mean look as in Haaland getting injured, which isn't look, but it worked.
It's been a discussion that I've not really entertained, but
it was a good pair of injuries.
It wasn't the worst thing that could have happened because it meant City set into a different rhythm.
Yeah, but now with them all being back, not so much you don't need Stones, but it's just much less important. Like if Stones isn't playing, it doesn't bring the whole house of cards down. It doesn't mean you have to change things around. Well, I suppose they have changed things around quite a bit.
We've got fullbacks.
But it works. But it works. So but then it's just a case of against Everton, if Stones does play, what do they do then? Does somebody come back in to more naturally hold the width on the left hand side? What's the knock on effect there? Does Foden still play with De Bruyne? Does that mean either Foden or Alvarez come out so somebody else can go in?
Because that's the interesting thing, is that if you do have Stones, say for example, stepping out of the defence into the centre, and you don't have the fullback stepping wide, then does that mean Foden can't drift into the middle? Does that mean that, you know,
exactly, they're going, it was the old Kyle Walker thing at the start of the season, Foden or Bernardo, but we mainly talked about it with Foden, could go inside because Walker was on the right, and talking about when Foden started on the left the other night, well, he wasn't in the left anyway. So that Newcastle game in particular, the first home game of the season, when Walker was on the right and Foden went inside, to all intents and purposes, on the ball anyway, he was inside. So it's the same thing, but especially when you've got both fullbacks going up. But if that changes then that will have, you know, you can't rely on that quite so easily. And then maybe that goes back to Guardiola saying that's where the stability comes from. Because if you've got so many players in the middle and they all kind of drop into a shape with three, which I need to check, you've got extra bodies in there and more stability and it's fine. But then if you don't have the men in the middle and it has to be De Bruyne dropping back into a holding midfield or Foden, it doesn't work so well. And then the other side, you know, when you said, is there any need to change it for Everton? In terms of, we were talking fitness, what about morale? Like, does Grealish need to come in?
Yeah, yeah.
Does Doku? But obviously, I've seen that Grealish rumour about, you know, he got told he wasn't in the team, so he left training early or whatever. It's possible they'd still be on the bench with that, because do you remember that Southampton game in the pandemic season? Sterling was on the bench, and then afterwards, Guardiola gave that very sarcastic, arsey interview. You think, oh, who's he pissed off with here? And then you think, would he have done that again if it was Grealish? Obviously, because I've been away, I've not looked into it at all. I will, you know, try and find out what's going on with that. You know, but if, you know, if somebody moans after a situation like that, they're not likely to come in, are they? There's a situation where, if it is true, Guardiola might say, well, there's your chance, mate. You better take it. You know, like Cancelo.
He
played the derby, didn't he? He played Southampton. He played the derby. He was like, well, there's your chance. You better take it.
Here's some rope.
Just enough. So with Grealish, maybe there's that element. But if it's not Grealish, it might be Doku.
Yeah.
And just a case of, you've got to keep the players happy, because you just can't keep with the same players all the time. But then again, there is Copenhagen for that. So if we're in a situation already, which I don't think we are, but you know, normally when it's April, May, Guardiola's got his Premier League team, which is generally the rotated ones, and then he's got the Champions League team against, you know, the big boys, and everyone knew their place with that. Maybe he's thinking that already,
it gets a bit more balanced.
But it flips a bit.
Yeah, when there's a title race. The seasons where City have kind of fairly comfortably won the title, like back end of last season, they'd won it already. A couple of years ago,
pandemic year, when they got to the final as well, that was in the bag.
That was in the bag, and they kind of had that, oh, here's who's available, here's how we're going to play with those players. Like, in the races with Liverpool, there's a much more...
It is more like you're just going to have to keep playing less. Yes, that's true. But, and again, also, you wonder if it's almost the balance flips the other way at the moment, and Everton's the more important game. Because you win now, but you've got two chances against Copenhagen. And as much as Guardiola will say you've got to respect them, they're not that difficult. But even if they are that difficult, you've got a chance to batter them in the second leg.
You know when that second leg comes, though? It's between Liverpool away and United at home.
Good, that'd be a laugh. what a time of the year though. Like, it's good. Like, again, you're glad it's Copenhagen rather than, you know, any of the tougher teams. But as much as that would be good, Guardiola's never likely to go, let's try and blitz it in the second in the away leg. Sorry, is he first leg away from home? It will always be let's do the job and not do anything stupid to make sure you know we've still got the chance in the second leg. It would be interesting actually. Maybe he goes there thinking we've got an opportunity to actually finish this and then we can rest players in the second leg. I feel like he might be thinking. I don't think he thinks like that. I think he's like let's do the job first rather than try and gamble on giving ourselves a better situation for Liverpool and United and potentially put ourselves in a situation where we need to beat Copenhagen as well, and then you've got three difficult games anyway. So I think it would still be a... And look, whatever the outlook is, City could win 3-0 in Copenhagen anyway.
Yeah.
I know the group stage last season, that was terrible, that game. But there was a red card in the first half. And it was... Rodri scored a great goal. Was it Rodri scored a great goal on Mahrez? But it was the VAR, one of them. It was just the UEFA handball. But yeah, I feel like you just kind of approach that game as you normally would an away game. I don't think he'd keep it as especially tight as he did at Leipzig, for example, because the counter-attack threat isn't the same. But yeah, the next couple, it's just interesting because of all those big games are slowly creeping into the horizon now.
That's it for the free version of Let Me Talk. There is more for members, though. Go to lmtpod.com if you want to sign up for those longer ad-free episodes. Sam, what do members have for this one?
Yeah, we're responding to a listener's email about Guardiola. We got High Ceilings and Nadum starring in a viral video. The title race blown open, control of games against being inevitable. That was basically the whole backdrop to me being pissed off about an article in The Guardian. And Julian Alvarez stuff.
That's all for members. Those ad-free episodes are longer and they're out earlier. You can find out more on lmtpod.com.
If you want to send us an email, it's hello@lmtpod.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, so just search for LMTpod on there.
Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.